Just to reiterate what we said last night. Last night we said that 30 days before Pesach, and today we're 28 days before Pesach, the time clock is indeed ticking, something new comes into the world. Before 30 days before Pesach, this past Friday, you were eating pretzels, you were eating bread. There was no such thing as chametz. Chametz means something that's forbidden. Right from the 30-day mark before Pesach onwards till Pesach, we have a new thing in the world. It's no longer called chametz, it's no longer called bread, it's no longer called pretzels, it's called chametz, meaning something forbidden, but you are allowed to eat it. Till what time are we allowed to eat this wonderful thing called chametz? And we can own it until around midday. Rabbinically, now over for midday. Excellent. Now, this explains, of course, why prior to the 30-day mark, you don't even have an obligation to get rid of your chametz. You don't have an obligation to check your house for chametz. After the 30-day mark, you have an obligation to check your house for chametz, to rid your house of chametz, to sell it, to do anything possible to get rid of it, because only after that 30-day mark is it considered something even forbidden. That's why the 30 days before Pesach is extremely important. Tonight we'll go one step further. If indeed this is a forbidden substance, we have to define it. How would be the best clear-cut definition of what chametz is? What is chametz? If you have to define it to an idiot like me, what would you say? Not so clear. Not so clear. Not so clear either. One of the five grains, which is of course flour and oats, that came in contact with water for more than 18 minutes. Less than 18 minutes, not chametz. More than 18 minutes, chametz. And we forgot one thing. One of the five grains in contact with water for more than 18 minutes, that is edible for at least a dog. If you find the most amazing chametz, a piece of bread, okay, and this bread is so rotten that a dog would look at it and run away, you give it to a monkey, you throw it back at you. You give it to a dog, you throw it back at you as well. That is not considered forbidden for Pesach. Now, all year long, we take it down a notch. All year long, let's say the most trace meat in the world. In this week's Parsha, the Parsha of Shmini, we'll read about all the general laws of kashrut. Amongst them, you can't eat a pig. So, if a guy brings to Leo a pig, and the pig happens to be the most rotten thing in the world, it smells disgusting, but that's to you. Your dog, he would eat it. What's the law during the year? If you're crazy enough, you can eat it. The Torah never said no. However, when we come to Pesach, we go up a notch, we say it has to be non-edible for a dog. So as you know, sometimes dog eats things a human being doesn't. For example, if you happen to have perfume, and this perfume has real alcohol in it, that's made from grain, then it might be considered chametz if it's edible for a dog. And indeed, cases have shown that dogs don't necessarily say no to some alcohol. As a matter of fact, some human beings even drink aftershave. Remember Eid from the yeshiva? We had the most Jewish Arab in our yeshiva back in Israel. His name was Yid. Absolutely, his name was Eid in Arabic, so we used to call him Reb Yid in Hebrew. So Reb Yid told me once at night his wife had pain in her tooth. She had a bad tooth. So he took a little cotton. He told her, put a little in my aftershave on it and put it there as alcohol. It would be like a pain relief. And it didn't work. So he said, drink it. She drank it. I said, she okay? She's fine. She went to work. So as you know, perfumes might be something with real grain made from alcohol that is edible for at least a dog and sometimes even for human beings. And that's forbidden on Pesach. However, if Joey has a rotten piece of meat in his refrigerator and it's totally covered with breadcrumbs, a good Hawaiian chicken, and it's so rotten he didn't throw it out for months and years that even his dog would throw it back at him, that you can keep in your house for Pesach, and if you're crazy enough, you can even eat it. Now, what does this show you? This shows you the Torah never said that you can't eat something that you wouldn't eat anyway. If it's something you would not have eaten anyway, the Torah wouldn't say don't eat it. Why would the Torah even open their mouth? The Torah, God wouldn't tell you don't eat a rotten piece of meat. If you have half a brain, you don't eat a rotten piece of meat. If you have half a brain, you wouldn't eat a rotten piece of bread on Pesach that happens to be green already. Correct? What can God come and tell you? God can come and tell you the most delicious piece of bread. The one that you'd eat anyway. The one that you, everyone in the right mind eats for breakfast, I'm telling you, 8 days a year, don't eat it. Ham, it's sold in the supermarkets. Everybody eats it and buys it. It's healthy. That's what God can tell you not to eat. If it's rotted to the extent that even a dog won't eat it, then obviously it's not chametz, and you can keep it in your homes and own it throughout the Pesach holiday. As everyone understands, that if that's the case, 28 days before Pesach, we have to start thinking about getting rid of our chametz. On the holiday of Pesach, there's a positive commandment and a negative commandment. The negative commandment is that you're not supposed to see the chametz or own the chametz during Pesach. You're not allowed to cook with it, obviously. You're also not allowed to get derive any benefit from it, namely you can't own stock somewhere that has chametz. And there's also a positive commandment to get rid of it, physically. We fulfill that part of the commandment in every which way we can think of. We burn it, we sell it, we actually get rid of it by removing it from our houses. My question is, does this concept of getting rid of this terrible thing called chametz, that all year long is wonderful, it's great, we eat it, we love it, but 8 days of the year for Pesach, it's terrible, can this concept of getting rid of it come in clash, contradict another concept within the same Torah? In your attempt to get rid of your chametz, can this come in clash with another Torah concept? And I want to give you all a hint. You're all looking at me blank tonight. This is not good. Okay, you got leftovers after a meal. What do you do with them? You sell them. What next? What else can you do?
Give
you give them away.
Throw them out, but you're not supposed to do that ever.
Why can't we throw it out?
Because it's a disrespect for food.
Correct. There's a prohibition in the same Torah that says you're not allowed to have chametz and you should get rid of it. It's awful. In the same Torah it says that you're not supposed to get rid, disregard, excuse me, you're not supposed to get rid of something that's good. If it's rotten, throw it out. But if it's good, if it's wonderful, if it's tasty, you're not supposed to throw it out. You're supposed to make some use of it. Therefore, in Canada, I have to say, they went a step further, especially in Nova Scotia. As a matter of fact, in Israel just a few weeks ago, there was a program about getting rid of garbage, and they say that Nova Scotia is one of the most advanced in the world. We have every kind of a category of garbage in our house. We've got compost, recycled, regular, not recycled. It's the most advanced in the world. They don't want you to get rid of anything that could be used. So therefore, you have a good meal of turkey, and you have breadsticks, and you have breadcrumbs on your chicken, and it's total chametz. You're not supposed to get rid of it. You're not supposed to throw it out. You're supposed to eat it tomorrow. If you don't want to eat leftovers, give it away to someone that might want to eat it. Don't just throw out food. That's a Torah prohibition, and it's a very important one. So what are we going to do? What are we going to do? We have to get rid of our chametz. We're not supposed to throw it out. Anyone have any suggestions? First of all, there's of course the common thing nowadays, once upon a time it wasn't so common, you sell it. You sell it to a non-Jew. However, that's not the most preferable thing to do, and we'll explain why as time goes on. It's not for now though, but that's not the most preferable thing to do. On one foot I tell you, it's a little funny that sale. That sale, even though it's a good sale, it's a funny sale. We'll explain it later. It doesn't make too much sense. What's the best thing to do? No, even if you can't see it, if you own it, you're still a prohibition. First of all, finish it. That's why every night we're coming here, we say 28 days till Pesach, 27 days till Pesach. Now is the time to go into your pantries, see what's left, and start saying, how can I make use of it? You have dried fruits left over from I don't know when. Think of a chicken recipe this Shabbos, you can incorporate those dried fruits. Don't throw out things if you can use them. You have some rolls, tonight is hot dog night. Serve rolls with the hot dogs. In other words, start thinking. Pesach is 27 days away, 28 days away. Let's start thinking how to use up the food. That's the best thing to do. Use it up. Eat it up. Secondly, on the same level, but a little less. Obviously, if you get point, push comes to shove, it's impossible. You can't finish all the food after all our stomachs are. How can we say this? It's minimized to a certain degree. Each person in their own way has a stomach that can hold so much. And what can we do? Not everything tastes good with chicken. You can make maybe dried fruits with chicken, but you can't put the potato chips in the chicken. So, with all due respect, not everything will work out. We're not mathematicians. We can't exactly know how much noodles to put into the chicken soup this Shabbos to know that if we put this amount this Shabbos and that amount next Shabbos by Pesach, there'll be nothing left. Obviously, there'll be leftovers. What do we do with the leftovers? The best thing to do on 2 days before Pesach, a day before Pesach, is to give it away. give it away to non-Jews that are not obligated in these laws, and they will utilize it much better than the garbage. Obviously, you can't just throw it out in the garbage, because that would violate the Torah law of Baal Kashrit, of rooting food for no reason. Now, if push comes to shove, you're living in a place where there's only Jewish people, and you can't give it to anyone, then I can understand. But since we are living in a place where we can utilize these food banks, obviously it's the best thing to do. The truth of the matter is, why should I give away my very expensive Manischewitz ready-made chicken soup to a non-Jew? A non-Jew can get the same soup much cheaper in the supermarket, and I'm going to give him away the most expensive piece of meat and the most expensive chicken soup that's kosher. Secondly, not only am I going to feel bad about giving it away, I'll feel bad about losing it. I mean, think about it. We spend so much money on kosher food, it's very difficult to keep kosher, and we're just going to give that away so easily. And therefore, what is the more practical thing to do, for example, with all the alcoholic beverages that some of us have in our home? As you know, most alcohol is made from grain, and therefore it's chametz on Pesach. And giving away alcohol, with all due respect, a little bottle can cost $20, $30. I don't know how many people have the fear of God to do so. And indeed, this brings us to our next subject, and that is the whole, some people say halachic fiction, some people say necessary fiction, and that, of course, is the sale of chametz. Now, let me just give a word of background. The Talmud says that from Torah law, midoraita, bebitul sagiway. All you got to do with your chametz is the following. You don't have to give it away. But what do you got to do? You got to nullify your own ownership from it. What does that mean? That means Billy on the eve of Pesach will say a proclamation that's written in most siddurs. All my chametz, whether I've seen it, whether I didn't, it's in my house, I own it, shall be ownerless. I no longer own it. I don't want it. You make that verbal declaration from the biblical Torah law, God is satisfied. So that's all you got to do, Doug. Just make a declaration, it's ownerless. So basically, you look at your pantry, you got noodles, you got pretzels, you say it's ownerless, and you're fine. But, do we believe it? Do we believe it? When you say it's ownerless, and then you lock your house and you go to work, do you really believe that it's ownerless? When you want something to be ownerless, though the Talmud says it's good enough to make a verbal declaration, with all due respect, our minds don't work that way. You need, when we make it ownerless, we throw it in the garbage. We throw it outside the door. I would believe you if you took your noodles and you put it outside your door. And you write on it, ownerless. Take it. I don't want it. But when you leave it inside your house, it's in the pantry. You leave the alcohol, you leave the schnapps in there, and all you say is it's ownerless. Whoever wants it can take it. And you say it in front of your wife, in front of your kids. I mean, come on! Therefore, the sages came along and said, the human mind doesn't work that way. We gotta humanize this. Now, how did they humanize it? They said, you gotta remove it from your house. Or, and this what brings us to our subject, came along a very important rabbi who was once caught on a ship. And on a ship, what can you do? You can't give your chametz away to the food bank. You're on a ship. So what did he do? He said, why don't I sell my chametz, physically sell it, to a non-Jew? So not only am I declaring that it's ownerless, but I am physically selling it in a bona fide halachic sale to a non-Jew. So once again, from a halachic point of view, biblically, all you got to do is declare that it's ownerless. And that's what we do. We declare it's ownerless. But the human mind doesn't work that way. You declare it's ownerless and you leave it locked up in your house, do you even believe your own declaration? Case scenario, will say no. And therefore, the rabbis came along and said, the sages said, rabbinically, you got to remove it from your house, or, and this what brings us to our subject, sell it. Now, how do we sell it? What do we do in essence? We nullify our ownership, and we go one step further, we actually sell it to a buyer. A buyer comes along and says, I want it. And he buys it from you. Now, who can you sell it to? Who are the potential buyers for this chametz in your house?
Non-Jews.
Only non-Jews. Why can't you sell it to a Jew? Excuse me? Because a Jew can't sell chametz. Can't have chametz on Pesach. And if you give him your chametz, you are putting what's called a stumbling block in front of a blind person. Let's say the Jew doesn't know about Pesach, doesn't know about chametz. You pull one over his eyes. That's not right. That's not moral. In fact, it defies Jewish law. You're not allowed to put a stumbling block in front of someone who doesn't know any better. That means that indeed, start eating up. The time is ticking. If you indeed do not for some reason or another finish all your chametz, you can of course give it away. But if you're so worried about giving away your very expensive kosher food, you can sell your chametz to a non-Jew. He has every right to pick it up and take it and pay you for it. If he decides to forego that right, that's his business. However, it belongs to him. And throughout the duration of the holiday, it belongs to him. And we began yesterday to discuss that the sale usually begins with each and every one of you deciding that indeed these laws are a little too complicated. Let's make the rabbi the agent. You sign the power of attorney that we went over last night. And this power of attorney basically says exactly who you are, that you appoint me to be your agent, where the chametz is situated in your homes, where your homes are, and in a case in which you may not be there for the holiday, you may be away for the whole Pesach. We have members of the community that are going away to their families for the whole Pesach. Obviously, the sale is only going to take effect if you leave a key somewhere in town and let us know where it is, just in case the guy we sell the chametz to would like to pick up his goods. Obviously, he can have access to it. In essence, usually this non-Jew does not come to Phil's house and take all of his pretzels. He usually doesn't come over to Leo and say, give me the bread, I want it. What usually happens? He owns it. Jewish law, Nova Scotia law, he owns it. He even paid a deposit for each and every item. We said he has to pay the minimum for each person, so let's say we have 100 powers of attorney, he pays a penny per power of attorney, he gives us $1, a deposit. And the rest is a debt. What's a debt? A debt means that if he doesn't pay, you can sue him in court, but it belongs to him. You totally and utterly forego your right. Now, we sell it to a man in Halifax for the last year since I've been here, I think before I came also. He knows exactly what he's getting, he has the powers of attorney, and he does not have room for all your chametz. Doesn't have room for all your chametz. So what do? We lease, you all lease him part of your homes to store his chametz. So let's say you're going to say, I'm leasing him the pantry, and in the pantry is all my chametz, it's locked up, and that's where it all is. And he knows exactly what he's leasing, he knows exactly where it is, he goes over the powers of attorney, and he knows what it is. And that's what we do to help him out. But that also helps us out. How does it help us out? No, chametz is still in our home. That doesn't help you. Actually, you're right. But I don't think you were alluding to the same thing I was.
Certainly.
Let's hear. Explain.
You say it better than I do.
Oh, okay. As Victor pointed out, we have to sell it to a non-Jew. Which transaction, which sale takes with a non-Jew? Does money take? Does a contract agreement take? Does a handshake take? There's so many different ways to facilitate a transaction in Judaism that we're not sure which one takes with a non-Jew, because in each and every one there's a controversy. So what do? We do all of them. One of them is to lease him a non-movable property, namely part of your home. And by doing that, by dint of that, you also basically give him the ownership over the chametz, the contents, the movable property within that place. So when you lease him your pantry, you are also giving him, by giving him the pantry, the movables in the pantry, in this case the chametz. Very much like selling the home, and you actually sell him a furnished home. So by buying the home, he's actually buying all the furniture within the home. That's what we do, and it actually helps us get rid of our ownership of the chametz. So by leasing it to him specifically, we're getting rid of our ownership of the chametz, as Victor pointed out just a minute ago. That's exactly what he meant too. Now, going on one step further, and this is very important, and I just realized that this year, not last year, and I apologize. The reason is, last year Pesach came out Monday night. Monday is garbage pickup day. And that's great, because all our chametz was taken away Monday, we were very happy, and I didn't think about the following situation.
Well, it may be garbage day for you, it's not garbage day for all of us.
Okay. My garbage day is Monday. Last year it worked out nicely, Monday night was the Seder. Now, by Monday at a certain time, or Eve of Pesach, and this year Shabbos at a certain time, we have to not have ownership on any of our chametz. So what do? Part of it we got rid of, part of it we ate, and part of it we sold. What can't we sell? We can't sell something that a non-Jew doesn't want. I can promise you that no non-Jew in Halifax wants your garbage. However, we have a problem. What's the problem? Whether you like it or not, and believe me, I'm assuming no one in this room likes their garbage, It's on your property. What do we call that in Jewish? On your chatzer. Your chatzer, your courtyard, can acquire for you items in Jewish law. And if it can acquire for you items in Jewish law, then obviously things that are on it belong to you. So you got a problem. We, of course, in Halifax, like to compost. So you have many articles of garbage, which could be edible for a dog, that are on your property. That are chametz. Not to mention the fact that it could be in your regular garbage you have this. So therefore, it's very important to ensure that at the extent possible, you get rid of it before Pesach, either by, obviously, the normal garbage pickups, or by going to the dumpster. I know this sounds a little ludicrous, and I know this sounds like almost impossible to do, but the truth of the matter is, it's something that is indeed needed. If for some reason both of these particular avenues are impossible, then I would suggest to do the following. To basically go and pour on your garbage some sort of a substance, whether it be bleach or whatnot. On the one hand, it's not terribly harmful to the environment, but on the other hand, is harmful to the garbage so that it's not edible for a dog's consumption. And on that particular note, obviously, you will ultimately not have to be liable for that garbage. What's that? No, I don't think it's violating the prohibition that we spoke about earlier of ruining things, because ultimately it's garbage. You're not going to eat it. The next time it's going to be found, it's going to be in the dumpster or in the compost. So ultimately, I think that is the best idea. Or, you know, to the extent possible, if you have a neighbor two blocks down that actually has a garbage pickup, bring it to them.
Tonight just wanted to clarify something that when I was asked yesterday after shul. We spoke a little bit about how you, on your part, can nominate me to be your agent to sell your chametz on your behalf. We clarified that I'm not buying your chametz, because if I'm a thinking Jew with half a brain, I obviously wouldn't want to buy your chametz a week before Pesach. So if I have half a brain, which I hope God has indeed given me, I won't buy your chametz. But I have the power of attorney to sell it based on your instructions, and that's basically what the contract agreement between us is. However, the second part of it, namely how do I sell it to a non-Jew before Pesach, that part is a little more tricky. The reason is, Judaism is very specific as to how ownership is transferred. How do I transfer ownership from A to B? How do I become the owner of something? Now, before we go into seeing how, let's first understand why would that be important. Namely, why is it important to you to know how ownership is transferred? Where could the transfer of ownership be halachically important? Very good. Absolutely. If a Jew can't own his chametz, obviously we have to ensure that it's not in his ownership anymore. He is not liable for it. He has no connection to it. It's totally nullified from his ownership. So we have to know how to transfer ownership. Absolutely. On the other side of things, do you remember there was one episode in Judaism where we need to own something fully, wholeheartedly? When is it impossible to fulfill our obligation with something borrowed? Oh, very good. Your own etrog and lulav on the first day of Sukkot must be owned by you. So you must do a bona fide transaction to go ahead and buy it. You have to know how to buy it and transfer ownership from the seller to the buyer, in this case, you. Very good. Yes, some of that. Everything goes in, doesn't go out. Great. Great. And anyway, the truth of the matter is that all the transactions in Jewish law, namely, how do I transfer ownership from one to another? This is all with regard to how do I transfer ownership from one Jew to another. Namely, I want to buy an etrog, so if the buyer happens to be a Jew, and I'm a Jew, and I buy it from him, so there's ways of transferring movable property. There's many ways. For example, one of the ways of transferring movable property is picking it up and showing everyone, you see, this is mine. That's how you buy movable property. A second way of doing it is not just by picking it up, but by taking it, by walking away from it. Walking away with your lulav and etrog, walking away with your pen, is you're showing everyone you own it. A third way is by having a contract agreement between us. A fourth way, you can actually take whatever movable property and put it into a bigger deal. Namely, if you're going to sell a house, you can make the furniture part of your deal. So you can say, I'm buying the house, and with it all the furniture. I'm buying a furnished house. There's many different ways of transferring property, and when we indeed sell the chametz, we do all six. Does anyone here know why we do all six? Why don't we just do one of the above? like just give money. That's one of the ways. Just give money and you buy something. Why don't we do all six? The problem is, and this Shelley's going to love, there happens to be a controversy with regard to each of the six if it takes with a non-Jew. However, much to our benefit, there isn't an opinion that says that all six don't work. So if opinion number one says 1 through 4 doesn't work with a non-Jew, he by default will say number 5 and 6 does. So in order to totally ensure, as Victor pointed out, that doesn't belong to us at all, we do all six with the non-Jew. So I always make sure a week before Pesach, I have it written down tomorrow in my planner, to call him and say, I remind you, bring a few coins, so we can do the transaction of money between us, which is okay according to 5 opinions out of 20, whatever. And then we're going to have the barter agreement. He's going to give me an object, let's say he give me a pocket knife, and as a barter, he'll take all your chametz, right? That's okay, opinions number 6 out of 8, whatever, and so on and so forth. So ultimately, we do all the various acquisition acts in the Torah when we sell the chametz, because this is a pretty grave thing not to own, and we better make sure not to own it. Therefore, I don't encourage you to personally say, I'll take care of it, simply because of these various controversies, but rather give it to someone that's a so-called expert that ultimately will be able to take care of it for you.